Welcome to today's New Life Live podcast. Today's podcast can be downloaded through iTunes or streamed through your mobile device using Stitcher, the smart radio app. Visit newlife.com/Stitcher to download the app today.
Hi, welcome to New Life Live. Larry Sonnenberg sitting in for Steve Arterburn today, and we have Dr. John Townsend here and Dr. Sherry Denham, and we'll be taking your calls in just a little bit.
I really appreciate the advice you guys give people. It's from a biblical perspective, and just listening has really helped me in some way.
One of my sisters began to have an affair with my husband.
Really? You're a mom and you're afraid of your mom?
Yeah.
Does she breathe fire?
Well, yeah.
See, love's a decision because, when Jesus tells us in John 14, new commandment I give you to love each other. And love is more than just a feeling. There's a decision. There's a choice in that.
Whoa. Can we go into a different conversation here?
I reckon.
At a later time in life when the child's 22, closeness can end up being toxic.
You can't go to therapy and not feel.
Hi, it's New Life Live, and we are here. We're going to take your calls, but first, I wanted to just have a little conversation with John for a minute here. You know, there's a lot in the news. Today, we'd be remiss not to mention it's the 50th anniversary of Martin Luther King's speech, the I Have a Dream speech, and that was a pretty incredible thing, and it's being celebrated today, and the president's going to make a speech. It's a big deal, and I'm really, you know, when you think about the content of his speech, how people should be judged by the content of their character, not by the color of their skin and such. I mean, that was powerful.
Yeah. Yeah, not only – by the way, hi, Larry.
Hey, John.
How you doing?
Good.
Good to see you. One of the things you find out in people that make changes in cultures, Larry, is that somebody's got to inspire the deeper part of us. Abraham Lincoln once said we've got to inspire our better angels. And that's what Dr. King did civil rights. He not only said, well, some things are wrong and some things are right, and laid out the realities that basically African Americans were hopelessly just kind of like marginalized. But then he gave a vision of a bigger picture.
Yeah.
That's where leadership comes in. It's what God does. He gives us a picture of the future. So we're so grateful for that kind of innovative, visionary thinking.
Yep, and he did it with good power, and it was amazing. But the other thing that was in the news, and it brings up the subject of the importance of fatherhood and a strong dad in the home. And I was having a chat with Mike Nason before we went on the air here, and the question came up, is Miley Cyrus suffering from the lack of a strong father? You know, there was an interview where her father, Billy Ray, made the comment that he left the disciplining to mom, and he was kind of the cool dad. He rode motorcycles with his daughter, and he did all the fun stuff, but he left the disciplining to her, and now we see the kinds of things that she's up to. And I just wanted to speak a little bit about not really talk about her so much as just the importance of dad, and just get your thoughts on that. But, the importance of a strong father in the role, especially of a young lady and young man.
Well, plus we've got our partner here, Sherry Denham, to speak to this.
Hello. Yeah, I see for women that daddy wounds or the lack of having a father has so much to do with their sense of self-image. They kind of identify with their mom in ways of nurturing and loving and all of that. But when it comes to how I feel about myself, how I feel about my strength, how I feel about my beauty, those type of things come directly from the heart of a dad. Mm. So if a dad is either not around or if he's passive, what it creates in the heart of a woman is a longing, a longing to find some man to belong to. We want the arms of a strong man. We want to know that we're safe and protected. And so there's a lot of anxiety that comes from women who haven't had that strength to wrap around.
Yeah. Right. And not only the protection, but the structure. You know, when 1 Thessalonians 2, Paul says, I was with you, Thessalonians, as a nursing mother, but I was with you as a challenging father.
Yeah.
The challenge that, no, you're in timeout, no, you're not getting the car keys, those sorts of structures build internal structure and self-control within the girl.
Yeah. You're right.
So it's the nurturant part and the, no, you're not going to have that video game. Yeah. You're not going out with that jerk.
So protection.
There you go.
And you know what? Women will end up giving sex to get love. because ultimately they want the love of their dad.
So call to arms to all you dads out there. You know, stand up and be a dad. We'll be back in just
a moment.
We
need you.
Yeah.
Sometimes wives feel guilty when they think about investing in themselves. Sometimes the women are like, gosh, it just isn't practical, or doesn't make sense, or it costs too much. And I'm like, look at the cost you've had to carry and what you've lived with for all these years. You're worth getting that self-care.
It's an eye-opener to me because it made me to understand what sexual addiction really is.
I had no motivation, no joy, and no insight.
The Women in the Battle Workshop is designed for women dealing with a man's sexual addiction issues. Join Dr. Sherry Denham November 1st through the 3rd in Southern California. Call 1-800-NEW-LIFE to register or to find out more. That's 1-800-639-5433 or log on to newlife.com.
I will continue to break down doors and blow up walls that get in the way of this healing process.
If God is for you, who could be against you?
1-800-NEW-LIFE. 1-800-NEW-LIFE.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now, back to the program.
Hi, welcome back. New Life Live. Dr. John Townsend, Dr. Sherry Jenham, and we are going to go to your calls in just a minute. But this is just about 10 days away from wedding day for Sherry.
You're counting too?
Yeah. Is it 10 days? I'm just guessing.
It is 10 days. Okay. I have an app on my phone that counts down by the days, minutes, seconds. It's very exciting.
How are you doing?
Fabulous. I am a glowy bride right now.
Yeah, it's glowy.
I really am. Yeah. I am having so much fun. People keep asking me, are you all right? And I'm going, I'm having the time of my life.
All right.
Looking forward to a day of celebration.
Yeah, I
because bet. You did it right.
I did.
You did it the hard way.
I did.
You didn't go impulse and romanticism and crazy thinking. You did it right. So it's wonderful. And he's wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. We have much to celebrate on our wedding day and even on our wedding evening, you know, and it's anticipating even all those special things that you've waited for. And so it's not just the day, it's the whole day into the evening. And I can't tell you how excited I am that I've waited.
Very cool.
So,
well, happy for you.
Thank you.
Just to remind everybody to keep praying for Steve. Steve Arterburn had ACL surgery just a little over a week ago, a week and a day ago. And he's been in some pretty intense pain. He's going back to the surgeon today to get another recheck. And hopefully all this is normal. We believe it is. But just pray for him so he can get back here on the microphone where he belongs.
I saw a photo of him with all his kids piled up on the bed.
The bed.
Wasn't that
great?
Great photo. It's just so Steve, you know.
He's
definitely being loved up while he's getting better.
Okay. Well, let's go to the phones. Let's talk to Andrea. She listens on KKLA right here in L.A. And Andrea, how can we help you today?
Hi, how are you guys?
Good. What's up with you?
Okay, let me tell you guys. I have my question. My question is, how can I forgive my husband for leaving me when I was pregnant? And then he left me for like a month, and then he came back, and now he's and then he went to jail. But I cannot like forgive him for that. I still throw it in his face. And
he went where?
It broke up. Yes, you said he went, and we lost you.
He went to jail.
Okay.
Jail for 4 months. When he left me the first time, he came back and apologized, told me to forgive him, and I thought I did, but I still have it, and like I don't feel safe with him at home. I'm scared of him, and I don't know how to get rid of my fear, and I have so much anxiety over it. Like, I don't know what to do. I don't know if I should leave him because I'm scared, and because every time I feel scared, I just leave it, you know.
Well, Henri, what did he do? Can you tell us what he did that landed him in jail?
Can you walk to a different part of your building or something because your cell phone keeps coming out?
Okay, let me see. Can you hear me now? Is it better?
Sounds a lot better.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. So
what was it? What was his crime?
I just bought a new place, a new house, and it even got worse. Like, I feel like, am I going to be able to do it? Am I going to be? So I'm getting so much fear.
Andrea, can you hear me?
Uh-huh.
What was his crime?
Yes.
What was his crime?
Why did he go to jail?
A forgery in a check.
Forgery.
Okay.
Yeah. So, when he came back the first time, when he left me, I had a high risk pregnancy, and it was the last month of my pregnancy when he left. I couldn't find him. He didn't answer my calls, and when he came back, he was really bad in drugs. So he told me all these horrible things, and now he's saying this is not true. But then later on, I found a letter that he wrote to this girl and saying, oh, this month that we spent together. So I'm like, I really don't want to believe that. I don't know. I just don't know what to believe. I'm just scared. I'm living in my new place instead of feeling happy. And I just feel so nervous and anxious and just, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to get rid of my fears. I just don't know how.
Well, I think your fears are trying to tell you something. I think they're trying to tell you that there's something to be afraid of. When you're saying, I don't know what to believe, I would say, Andrea, I need you to believe it all. You've got to believe the letter that you found. You've got to believe that the forgery was bad enough that he had to go to jail. You've got to believe that he's got integrity issues and trust issues and he deceives people.
Yeah.
He's an addict. He uses drugs.
Yeah, he does.
Was he doing these things before you married him?
No, he was good. He was before I met him. He had a drug problem and everything. But when I met him, he was clean and he was really good. I have two kids from another marriage, so he was really good to my kids. So, at first I was like, I'll give him the chance.
Andrea?
The benefit of a doubt.
Andrea, let me give you a solution.
Okay.
Jesus tells us that when we clean out a house, and he told us in parable, he said, when you clean out a house, if you don't get good stuff inside there, that seven demons will come back in. Now, what he's talking about is when we're empty inside and lonely and scared, then bad things happen to us and we feel bad. You have what we would call it probably an abusive kind of thing going on with your husband, and I'm hearing a lot of what's called dependency, that if he tells you he's going right, you're not sure. If he tells you he's going left, you're not sure. You have some dependencies on this man. So whether or not he was a felon or whether or not he is Billy Graham, every healthy marriage means you've got to give up that dependency on the spouse and depend on two things. I want you to depend on God, which we're all to do, but I need for you to get in a support group. It could be a church. We'll give you numbers, pastors, counselors, social services, communities. But until we get good people inside us, like that Jesus story, you're going to feel dependent and you won't know what's reality. So we're going to leave you on the line. We're going to get you help. But that's why we feel that way when somebody in our life is unstable. We're going to make you stable by the other relationships.
Okay,
Andrea.
Take care.
Thanks for your call. Okay.
It's amazing how much we, Proverbs 10:10 says that when we wink at sin, when we say, well, he's not that bad, and I just thought I'd give him a chance. You have no idea.
No idea.
What's on the other side. So women, just caution, or men, just caution. If you see these behaviors on the front side of courtship, don't take them lightly. Most
that's
of the time
so
they get
funny.
Worse in marriage.
I was doing a consult with some executives today, Sherry, and one of them was having a struggling marriage. And the question was, is my spouse always gets defensive when I bring up, you know, their attitude or they yell or scream. And I said, and they said, how can I speak to them better? And I said, well, we're all supposed to be nice, but why isn't your spouse coming up to you and saying, tell me when I'm harsh. Tell me when I leave my socks on the floor.
Good point.
You tell me.
Good
so point. Don't make your standard, I've got to walk tippy toe around this person.
Yeah.
Like you're talking about somebody that winks at sin. You want a spouse that says, if I screw up and I hurt your feelings, you come
tell
to me.
Yeah.
I want that kind of marriage. So keep your standards
Amen.
High.
Yep. Good.
All right. Well, let's go and talk to Carrie in Washington, D.C., listens on WAVA.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I'm a New Life member, and I love
the
program.
Thank you.
Thank you, thank you.
You're welcome. I've learned a lot from you all.
Oh, good. What can we do for you today?
Well, my question is, how can I get my underemployed husband to get to work harder, and how can I cope
you
with
just,
this?
You just made your first mistake, Casey, Carrie. Anytime, and I'm just kind of giving you a hard time, but anytime we say, how can I get my spouse to... We're in serious trouble.
Yes. Well, I am in serious trouble. You're
okay.
Right.
All right. Keep going. But the answer will be something about what can I do to help him make choices to get better employed. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, and the second part of my question is, how can I cope with this as yet another wild disappointment in my marriage?
Oh,
because
goodness.
He is very talented in his field. He's not disabled. And my suspicion, I feel like it's pride and laziness and denial that prevents him. And as far as how I can deal with it as yet another wild disappointment, I don't bring up these things to say as though I'm ruminating everything over the past, but we have overcome his sexual addiction, alcoholism, financial betrayal, hot-headedness, emotional incest, and I just feel like, how much more can I take?
Can you speak to how you're feeling right now about this? As I'm hearing a lot of emotion in your voice.
Really anxious. Really just fed up, and kind of like I don't know what else to do, and almost like, what's next? Like, this is what I'm dealing with now the past 5 to 10 years, just less and less and less and less, because this self-employment thing, you know, you haven't worked in 12 days, you're waiting for the phone to ring. It's like, well, you know what? We've got bills to pay. Go out and get a job if it's not working the other way.
Yeah.
What is he spending his time doing during the day when he's at your home? Is the door closed?
He is sometimes checks email a lot.
Okay.
And works on being his... He's a scoutmaster, so he spends a lot of time doing that. I would say it's practically a full-time job. And going to exercise and watch television.
Just sounds a little adolescent to me. And there's a lot going on that's distracting him from being a man.
Yes.
And so you've got a problem because how many kids do you have?
Three.
You've got three kids and an adolescent under one roof. And there is a reason that he's staying in this adolescent mode. I mean, he's got addict tendencies, right? He's got a lot of, you know, past of addiction. But I think he's just replacing it with another addiction. Could be on the internet. Could be being addicted to being a scoutmaster. I mean, he's trying to fill a hole inside. And he's not doing a good job. What have you guys done to address the issue with a counselor, a therapist?
We haven't been in a while because he says every time we go that it doesn't help and it makes it worse. So now he's refusing to do anything. We've been to counselors many times. We've been to marriage weekends. We've done one-day seminars. I'm about to put on a marriage one at our local church and hoping that we'll go to that one, but...
What is his solution?
He doesn't have one, and any time I bring it up and discuss it, he leaves the room and goes outside and smokes a cigarette.
And how serious is your financial condition?
Well, I don't... It's not good. I mean, it's definitely getting worse, and it just feels like it puts more subtle pressure on me to perform and meet it. It's just not good. It's not good. And I, to be honest with you, I don't really know the full picture, but I'm sure it's not good because he's betrayed me before to the tune of, several hundred thousand dollars.
So. Oh, goodness.
Yeah, he's got a problem, and it's not being addressed. As much as you think he's in recovery, he's not. You know, even if you say he's in recovery, he's acting like a dry addict.
Oh, yeah.
So you guys have got to get back into treatment. You need to be in a group like Al-Anon, and you may actually at some point, my dear, have to do what's called a bold move, saying that this has been going on for years. And if you do not get employed within the next 3 weeks, and then I need to talk to an attorney about filing for legal separation, because I can't live with an adolescent. I need a partner. So we got to get into counseling. I mean, this is serious.
I'm going to send you a copy of Boundaries in Marriage. But there are certain tough boundaries that loving spouses do. And it's sort of time if he doesn't own the beam in his eye.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Carrie, thank you for calling New Life. We'll send that book off to you, and we wish you the best. So you're listening to New Life Live, Dr. John Townsend, Dr. Sherry Denham, and we'll be back right after this. Thanks.
There's a common misconception in our society that divorce is the only option for a broken marriage.
A month before coming here, I went and saw a non-church-related counselor. The lady I talked to said, you need to be divorced by the end of the year.
Here at New Life, we believe the complete opposite. Your marriage can be repaired, no matter what you've gone through.
Everything, even the most devastating thing in your marriage, God can take and work it together for good.
Bring your troubles to New Life's Marriage Weekend. From October 11th through the 13th in Columbus, Ohio, New Life's group counselors will be working to help struggling couples across the country. And Steve Arterburn, Mylon and Kay Yurkovich, and Drs. Dave and Jan Stoop will be teaching you how to repair your marriage. To register or to find out more, call us today at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433 or online at newlife.com.
I just want to say thank you. This weekend has been completely transformational.
1-800-NEW-LIFE.
Hi, this is Stephen Arterburn from New Life Ministries. We know that Christian counseling changes lives. We hear evidence of that every day.
I feel like I'm a person for the first time in my life. I feel like I wasn't whole before, or that I couldn't enjoy life. I had such a big weight on my shoulders that I had nothing to look forward to. I'm such a better wife, and I'm a better daughter, friend, a better worker. I feel absolutely free.
Our nationwide network of licensed Christian counselors means there is help available near you.
If anybody is considering Christian counseling, then they need to do it. They need to take that step.
You don't have to be stuck where you are, but you can't really expect to change unless you take action. Call us today at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. It could be the start of a whole new life for you. Christian counseling works, and we can help. Call 1-800-NEW-LIFE today. Someone who cares is always there at 1-800-NEW-LIFE.
We'd love to hear from you if you have a question or comment. Call toll-free 1-800-229-3000. Now, back to New Life Live.
Hi, welcome back. Dr. John Townsend, Dr. Sherry Denham, who will, next time she's on radio, be Dr. Sherry Keffer.
I know.
Yeah. How about that?
Yeah, I know. They're going to be going, who? Yeah. Who is this girl? Yeah,
that's when we say things like, well, there's Dr. Laura, there's Judge Jeannie, and there's Dr. Sherry.
There you
yeah,
go.
Exactly. It'll be the same voice.
Just, there you go.
We'll all transition to the new name. But it's important for me to take on his name. It's an identity thing. You know, a lot of times when it's like myself, I've been out here for a while, and sometimes they're like, they'll look at your husband and say, well, that's Dr. Sherry's husband. Mm. And I didn't want him to be an appendage. I want him to be a partner. So it'll be Kyle and Sherry Keffer.
Well, it says a lot also about, I think you're making a statement of trust.
It is all
it's
in.
It's a real legal trust.
It's like I'm giving up my identity. That's a big deal for a woman.
It's
I just
huge.
Want you guys to know.
Huge.
You don't really have to go through it unless you take on your wife's name. But it is a big deal. You go into this like black hole and hope that people, you know, remember who you are. But I know they will.
Well, you're not doing this right out of high school or college.
No, I've been around the block for a while.
You've had some business and some track
record. It's the spiritual equivalent of not signing a prenup.
There you have it.
Oh, I like that.
It's saying, I'm all in, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Way to go.
Yeah. Well, thank you. A lot of thought and prayer over that. So
before we go to the phones, I wanted to get something from each of you. We're going to the Holy Land next year, June 2nd to the 12th. And last year, John, you went. This next year, Sherry, you're going. I would just like to get your reflection, John, and your hope, Sherry. You were there too.
I was there.
Sherry was there.
That's right. You're going again.
Sherry was rowing that boat with both oars too.
So, just talk to me a little bit. Just quickly, tell me what are your reflections and what would you encourage people?
Well, I just think it's you have to do it. It's just a landmark event, Larry, where you're there in the place where all the characters of the Bible happened. Jesus walked, and Moses and Abraham, and the guides tell you stuff that's going on. So you get sort of this picture of this book that we learn from God's Word, and you find out the people and the passion, the relationships. But not only that, since everybody, all the New Life, so many of the New Life hosts are there, like Sherry, you're there getting not only the stories, because the guides will tell you the stories, they're professional training, but then you also get the recovery spin,
some teaching,
the emotional spin, the relational spin. So on a deeper dive, you get everything. Yeah. It's just a landmark event.
Yeah.
I have honestly not read the word the same since I went, because I'm very visual. And so I have images seared in my head, like of a manger, what a manger looks like. It's not this wooden thing with fluffy straw in it. It was a rock, a hewn out rock. And I think about the God of this world being placed in a rock. For me, like he went into a rock and he went into a tomb. Seeing pictures like that you could have never imagined. It's not like the little felt thing when you grew up in Vacation Bible School and you saw all those. It is so real, and it makes everything come alive. To have those images, there was no better way to get them than going there. So, Garden of Gethsemane, and we took communion out there. Yeah. I mean, I still have my little communion.
No, that was really emotional for me.
So emotional. Yeah. So it's a trip of a lifetime. Now is the time.
Yeah.
Now is the time.
And I don't remember who said it, but you're talking about the way you see Scripture now. But after the trip, one of the members who went with us said, you know, before I went on this trip, I read Scripture. It was black and white. Now I read it, it's Technicolor.
It's so true.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's so true.
Well, let's go back to the phones. But before I do that, call us at 800 New Life and talk about how to get on that trip, get the dates, the itinerary, the cost, all that. And let's go and talk to Margaret. Margaret listens in Phoenix, Arizona, or she watches us on TV. Margaret, thanks for calling us.
So this is my first time watching your program today, and it prompted me to give you a call.
Welcome.
Came to mind. Thank you so much. I have a 26-year-old son who a few years ago went off to school, went off to college, and had some experiences that I found out about afterwards, a year or two after. He got involved in a relationship with the woman, and hence she got pregnant and had an abortion and left him. And it's not at all anything that he wanted to have happen. He's never been the same, I don't believe. One of the things that is a reflection of the result of this is that he internalizes and takes responsibility for anyone who's ill around him. Even if my dog becomes ill, he thinks he's responsible. I recently, you know, came down with conjunctivitis, and it's something that I've been battling for about 6 months. He became aware of it, and I could tell immediately that he feels responsible for it. He's talked to me about this. It's been going on about 4 years.
This is new behavior. You didn't see it when he was growing up, this tendency to take too much responsibility?
No, well, not in that way. Jake has always been intense and serious, even couldn't really enjoy school as a kindergarten. He had to always do things right the first time.
Yeah, there are roots. There are roots in what you're talking about. We'll deal with the other side of the break, Margaret, but it sounds like the kind of trauma he went through in this relationship tapped into a tendency to be very hard on himself, perfectionistic, and underneath all perfectionism is guilt that I'm not doing it right, I'm not good enough, and I'm not making the standard. And there's ways to help him, so we'll work on that.
So we'll come to you just the other side of the break, Mark. And before we go to the break, just want to remind everybody, Every Man's Battle Workshop's coming up September 13 to 15, Nashville, Tennessee. Give us a call. You need to be there. You know it. So we'll be right back. Thanks.
First time I listened to the program, I was pretty much hooked just because of the honesty and compassion and caring that was given to the callers.
You can help New Life Live stay on the air by joining Club New Life today. Call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433.
It's just amazing to me the impact the ministry has had on people's lives.
Support Club New Life, and together we can help hurting people find help and transformation. Call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433.
I can't think of a better place. There's been times that my husband and I have talked about it when money maybe is a little tighter or whatever, and I thought, well, but it seems like I will turn on the radio and I will hear something. I'll think that's why I do it, because there's just so much out there. And the way it's handled is just awesome.
Call 1-800-639-5433 to join Club New Life today.
I've been struggling since I was probably in my mid-20s.
Every day, men struggle with sexual integrity. Impure thoughts, strip clubs, pornography.
I honestly felt like I was on an island all by myself, and I was the only one in the world that was like this, you mm-hmm. know, and why did God create me like this?
Find hope today at New Life's Every Man's Battle Workshop.
When I went to Every Man's Battle right from the very beginning, I realized that this is every man's battle, not just my battle.
Yeah. Become the man you want to be, the husband your wife needs you to be, the father your children can look up to.
Every Man's Battle explains to you why you are like you are. They give you the tools, and they teach you the scriptures, and they show you how to work your way through the problems and where to get help and how to get help and who to get help through.
To register or to find out more, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433 or log on to newlife.com.
Don't wait. Just go ahead and go, and it'll make a huge difference in your life and your family's life.
We're glad you joined us for New Life Live. To be a part of the program, call 1-800-229-3000. Now, back to the program.
Hi, welcome back. We are talking with Margaret from Phoenix, and she has a son who is a little bit of a rescuer. And John, you were making some comments at the close.
Yeah, Margaret, you still with us?
Yes.
I'm going to give you some thoughts that I wish your son was on the air with us, because they pertain more to him and to helping him. But you're the one that loves him, and you care, and you're the one calling. So kind of like, let's think of ways that you can bridge what I'm saying to him as opposed to directly to him. Am I making any sense at all right now?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
I'll translate. Yeah. Have your son listen to the show today. Yeah. Just go on to our blog, because there's
online.
Some wisdom that's
clarity
coming on.
Clarity from Dr. Scherer.
Yeah.
When you look at people who struggle with a deeper sense of responsibility and that sort of thing, most of the time there's a real sense of guilt, what we would call an omnipotent guilt, which means my mom's feelings are my fault, and I'm not good enough, and if global warming is my fault, and, you know, if a puppy dog gets hurt, it's my fault, this sort of thing. And your son is suffering from that, and it just sounds like it was probably triggered by the guilt anybody would feel towards what happened in the relationship with the woman that had the abortion. Let me give you the quick solution. Grief is the answer, because guilt will prohibit grief. Grief is when we say, this is sad. I'm deeply sad that I lost a child. I'm deeply sad I lost a relationship. I'm sad about the dog. I'm sad about not getting the money I wanted. And I'm sad that I'm not as, you know, my self-care is not good. I'm sad I weigh too much or whatever. And when we feel sad, we accept reality, and then we move on, because we processed it, we've confessed it, we get comfort from it from people, we're loved through it, and then we go make better choices. But when we feel this omnipotent sense of guilt, it's like this big blanket, Margaret, that lies over the sadness. Look at the sadness as this ocean of healthy feelings that got to come out so we can move on. But guilt is a blanket over the ocean that says you can't feel this. You're bad. It's all your fault. And you can never feel sad and move on. So if I were talking to Sam, your son, right now, I would say find a safe person. or a therapist or a small group or something, you've got to talk about the losses. It's not how bad you are, Sam. It's the losses you've experienced, and begin to let those go in community.
You know, you're so right, John. And there are churches even that have grief groups for those that have gone through and made decisions for abortion. And in a safe environment, you can talk about it and the losses in with others and get connection.
And they walk in guilty.
They do.
And they walk out sad.
Yeah.
Which is the way it's supposed to happen.
Yeah. It's exactly right. I know in the work that I've done, it's such sacred soul work when you're dealing
totally.
With people that have made a decision to abort. And the beliefs, as John mentioned, because of the trauma, end up looking like this. The beliefs are, I'm a bad person, and I should have done something. Those are two of the primary. So look at your son's behavior. Look at what's driving him. It's like anybody gets sick around him, and automatically he's trying to do something about it, almost trying to help that person live as a way of trying to rework the decision he made. I will very practically take people into grief in my practice by actually helping that child have a name.
There you go.
I actually have them go to Michael's, and I have them get a scrapbook, and I have them start putting pictures and stickers, and I actually have them name that child. It is one of the most sacred and painful processes they go through, but what happens is that child takes on an identity, and they become attached to the child that they will someday see with the Lord. And somehow making that child real to them helps them to move into the grief, own the responsibility, and come out the other side.
When we used to do post-abortion groups at our Healing as a Choice workshops, they would hold a little service. They named the child. They'd be given a rose and lay the rose.
Yep.
And
It makes it real instead of surreal, and you're not able to really work it out until you really face that person.
Now, Margaret, obviously you tapped into a lot of content because we all started blabbing. So what do you think of what you're hearing?
Well, what immediately is coming to mind, because I've been processing everything that's been said, is, excuse me, how is it that a person who may be what you consider, excuse me, perfectionist, how is it that they deal with this type of thing differently than someone who may not be? And how do I kind of confront that part of it?
Well, first off, is he aware of that? If he was on the phone and I said, your mom said you've sort of always been kind of hard on yourself and not been happy and had really unrealistic expectations, would he say, no, mom's on drugs, I have no idea what she means? Or would he say, yeah?
He would say, yeah, and that's the way it should be.
I need to be perfect, and I did something bad, so I'm going to be the perfect bad person. Hmm. So it's really getting him to a point where he can see himself more in reality, which is, I am a good and loving person that made a mistake. That made a decision. I did the best that I could, right? This is a situation that was out of control. But, you know, I'm sure he thought about it and had to make some tough choices.
Whenever I'm dealing with a card-carrying perfectionist, I always challenge that thinking a bit, Margaret. If he said, yeah, that's the way it should be, I'd say, right, we're supposed to be excellent. And what would he say? If I said we have to have excellent standards, what would your son say?
He would say that he has excellent standards and standards more excellent than anyone else.
Mm-hmm. By the way, that last statement's kind of disturbing to me.
Especially with the Savior that hangs on a cross,
right? is your son having other problems in relationships or at work? Because people that say that my standards are higher and better than anybody else tend to have conflicts in friendships and conflicts at work.
He does. He doesn't have a lot of friendships, and he is alone a lot. He thinks that's the way it should be.
I'm alone. I should be alone. Again, we're treating somebody who's not with us, so I'm having to ask you. So I'm talking to Sam, and I say, so tell me why it is right and proper that a 26-year-old should be alone a lot. What would he tell me?
Because he's different. He's different, and people don't understand him.
I don't belong.
Yeah, he needs a therapist ASAP.
Because, I know.
Because it's not only perfectionism. That's now that you've told me about the isolation, that is now a secondary issue. I'm concerned about depression. So I want you to tell him that you talked to some shrinks and they're nice people and all this, and they've seen 10,000 of him, and his life is not going to go well unless he gets professional help, because the perfectionism is secondary to a deep sense of isolation. So he's covered up with, well, if I can't connect with people, then at least I'll have high standards and say that I'm superior in some way. You've got to get him help.
I know. I guess that's why I called.
Well, okay. Is he financially on his own, or are you paying for any of his life?
No, he lives by himself.
Does he pay all his expenses?
He does.
Okay.
Take care of everything on himself, but
okay. If you came to him from a position of vulnerability, since you don't have any financial leverage, a position of vulnerability, would you please get at least this? You know, we can give you some great names. Would you please, for my sake, because I'm your mom, and if you come away from that session saying it was no deal, I get it. Would you please show up because I'm scared? If you came as a scared mom, how would your son feel?
Responsible.
Okay, use that. Use that.
Mm-hmm. And it may, I love your idea, John. It may even be that you join him in that first session.
There you go.
And just say, would you come with me for the first session?
You got to get the patient in the operating room, and then the surgery happens. But till they drive to that building and walk in the door, there's nothing. And your son's really struggling. He's got some character injuries that he needs to address.
I know, yeah.
Margaret, thank you for calling us.
About his safety, you know, at this point.
I get it, too. Tell him this is important, and he's going to feel like he's got to keep mom from being miserable, and that's fine. Get in the car.
Margaret, thank you for calling us. We're going to send you a New Life perspective that Henry Cloud and Dr. Jill Hubbard did on grief. See if that'll help you a little bit. Mm-hmm. But thanks for calling New Life.
You know, everything changed when we switched from the guilt into this deep isolation where he thinks he's... You know, the way to deal with the isolation is to think I'm superior, and then depression hits. So, you know, it reminds me of
It's a spiral.
Yeah, but it reminds me of a Bible verse, guys, where it says in Proverbs 20, verse 5, it says, a person's heart are deep waters, and a person of understanding draws them out.
Mm-hmm.
And every day, Sherry and I and the team are, you know, we're trying
drawing
to draw stuff
out.
And then we go, that's new.
But we didn't see that layer
you've
in the
got
beginning.
To listen.
Yeah.
You've got to listen to this stuff.
Well, it's fun sitting and watching you guys do this. I got to tell you that.
I was
a
captivated audience there, John. Uh-huh. I was over here taking notes.
Well, thank you. After the break, we'll get another call. I just want to encourage you to make a gift to New Life if you can. We're just right at the end of the summer, and it's really been slow. If you could join Club New Life or add a little bit to your Club New Life membership, it would help immensely. That's the rabbit in here giving that we're looking for, building up those regular monthly givers. And if you can pop for a one-time gift that would make a difference, that would be a great help. But we want you to give only if what we do sings to your heart. So
sharing our giving, we believe in.
Amen.
We believe.
Thank you guys. We'll be back.
At New Life, we are passionate about helping people experience recovery. And it's no exception when it comes to recovery from the addiction to drugs or alcohol. We are very grateful to have found what we believe is the premier facility to offer a Christian 12-step model of care. It treats the whole person and offers biblical values as the foundation for treating the mind, body, and spirit. Our partner in drug and alcohol addiction provides exemplary medical and psychiatric care, as well as Christian-based psychotherapy, pastoral counseling, biblical studies and meditation, educational groups, worship and prayer, and a Christian 12-step program. The approach is non-denominational and guides the patient to experience freedom through a renewed relationship with Jesus Christ. Call us today at 1-800-NEW-LIFE if you or someone you love is struggling with drug or alcohol addiction. That's 1-800-639-5433 or go to newlife.com. 1-800-NEW-LIFE, 1-800-639-5433.
2 years ago, we took 120 people to the Holy Land.
It was an incredible adventure for us. For me now, when I open up the Bible, it just becomes alive for me.
Once you go and see and do and touch and feel, there's just a connection that you just can't explain.
We're going to Israel again in 2014.
We're going to go June the 2nd through the 12th. We're going to go where David hid from Saul, Jericho, the tunnels under the Western Wall, and the Temple Steps, visiting the Wailing Wall, the Garden of Gethsemane, Masada, the Dead Sea, Mount of Olives, Bethlehem, the Garden Tomb, Caiaphas' house, and more. Then, from the 13th to the 15th, if you stay with us, we're going to go to Petra, to Mount Nebo, and to Amman.
It is probably one of the best crash courses in Bible you would ever have in your whole life.
Call Gill Travel at 1-800-223-3855. You can also get that off of our website. Ask for Donna.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now, back to the program.
Hello, New Life Live. We're back. Dr. John Townsend, Dr. Sherry Denham, and we've got time, I think, for one more call here. Let's go and talk to Susan on line three. She watches us on TV in Columbus, Georgia. Hi, Susan. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you very much. I appreciate you taking my call. I'm going to try to be very succinct. I have two grandsons that have recently moved to California with their parents. One is 10 and one is 12. The 10-year-old has had some issues in the past, but it has gotten worse. He's perfect in school, does great with other people, but he has violent explosions with his parents, will cuss like a sailor, threaten to harm himself, threaten to harm them, and then he's over in about 10 minutes, never takes responsibility. It's kind of a complicated issue because, I'm trying to get them help. My daughter says there's nobody going to change him. He refuses to go to talk to anybody, and she hasn't had the best experiences with counselors herself. So
that's what I was going to ask, Susan. My question was, well, first off, thank you for being an involved grandmother. And my second is, why is grandmother calling and not parents?
Because I think my daughter has serious health issues, and the dad tends to be either very passive or gets out of control, angry with him. And he's backed off completely after the last, I guess, about 5 years ago, when a couple of times he was totally inappropriate with the kids, and I'd let him know if it happened again what I was going to do. And they live closer to me. And,
God bless you. You're like our rock star of the week.
Well, I love them to death, and I miss them terribly, and I'm mad they moved them to California, but I'm just wondering, where do we start? Do they start? Because, you know, when she calls and tells me these things, then she thinks it's going to calm down and nothing's going to do any good, and I'm just trying to get some direction to say, try this person, or they can work on getting the child there, get you there first, and come up with a strategy. So I just need you all's expertise, because I know that, I'm at a loss, and, I love them dearly, and I want them to grow up healthy and know the Lord and the things that really matter.
Well, Susan, one thing I do know, I'm working with a family right now. There was a very rageful child in their home, and one thing I will tell you, underneath anger and rage and explosiveness is one of three things. It's hurt, fear, or sadness.
Right.
And somebody has got to get the heart of that little 10-year-old little boy. I'll tell you something, Susan. I'm going to be honest. It's not going to get better. It will get worse. That anger is the only way that little 10-year-old can feel power. Because when he gets rageful like that, you know what everybody does? They move back. They take some distance. He's training them. They're actually positively reinforcing his bad behavior. But at the core of it, we've got a little boy who somehow, somewhere experienced some hurt, and he got really afraid. And it may have come from his dad. Maybe that's why you had to threaten them, because something bad did happen.
Oh, well, I know that he has, on occasion, and I mean, this was a child from about the age of four, was a strong-willed child, very strong-willed. So, the dad, I think on one time, probably punched him. And there's a dynamic of a cousin who is much older, showed him pornography, and nobody in the family would take responsibility. My daughter and son-in-law cut off the relationship completely with him. But we don't know what happened in that that could have made
Susan,
the situation worse.
Susan, in terms of impact, whenever we work with a grandparent or an aunt or uncle, whatever, you see it clearly. I mean, Sherry and I are like, you know, seriously, we think you're just a rock star, but you don't have the power nor the authority.
I don't.
Okay?
I don't.
So, tell us about how you can relate to your daughter. Where's the relationship with your daughter? What's your power and influence with your daughter? Get the boy out of the way now. You've got to talk to your daughter about her problem.
I think, I mean, they're going to fly me back out to spend time with them. And, I mean, we have a very close relationship, but she, you know, she's hard-headed, is all I can say. And
all right,
I tend
I do a lot of role-playing when I'm working with executives to kind of get them into it. So I'm you and your daughter. And so I say, honey, we've had this thing so many times, but Sammy is really out of control, and I see it, and I really want you to get some help. Now, what's she going to say to me?
She says it's not going to do any good, and how am I going to get them there?
You mean, what do you mean, how can you get them? You mean there aren't, like, buses
to
and cars?
Go to somebody. He says he's not going to talk to anybody. He doesn't know what's wrong. Because, I mean, she sits down and tries to talk to him. The dad tries
to talk to him. Slow down. What's your daughter's name?
Laura.
Laura, listen to me. If he had a kidney disease and he was going to die in 6 weeks, would you say, well, he just won't go to the nephrologist?
Right. Right. I hear you.
What would Laura say to that?
She'd probably say, well, that's different.
Okay.
And I don't think it's different.
Okay, Laura, no, just
hold on.
Susan, you got to kind of give some space. We can do this if you get a little space here. So, Laura, I think it's really different because, you know, I don't know much. I'm not a – this is not my space. I've got another thing. But I'm concerned that your son's going to grow up to be a rageaholic and that he's going to hurt people or hurt himself, and it's not getting better, and I can't change anything. But what's the harm as a mom – and saying he might have a kidney disease, in other words, a psychological disease, and get a one
right.
session from somebody. To me, honey, I think you must be scared of what you're going to hear. And I'll go with you. I'll drive with you. But what's the harm of one session if it could be a serious disease? Now, what would Laura say to that?
I hope she'd respond positively. Maybe she is afraid what they're going to say.
Oh,
Sherry
nailed it, Susan. She's terrified, and now she's gone into denial because it helps her not deal with the fact that it's so scary for her. She's just shut down and withdrawn and discouraged. And you go back and wake it up and say, I'll stand with you, I'll fly down with you, I'll go with you. She needs an advocate.
Yeah, there may be some brain issues going on.
Who knows?
Got impulsivity issues. I mean, he definitely needs to be checked out by a therapist and a psychiatrist because kids have things that go on, too.
Sherry and I have not heard anything about your grandson that can't be helped in major ways. The research is great, from behavioral techniques to deeper analytics stuff to meds. It's just not hopeless at all. I'm sorry she had a bad experience, but we haven't heard one thing. And you can tell your daughter, these professionals have not heard one thing that can't be transformed if you'll go in there. Butcher that way.
What book could we send her that might be of help? What comes to mind?
Raising Great Kids.
There you go. Okay. We'll be sending that to you, Susan. Thank you for calling us here at New Life. I wanted to just remind everybody that we have 2 more hours that we're going to be here.
Yay.
So if you didn't get on this hour,
stay on
keep
hold.
Holding the lines and... Give us a call at 800-229-3000. Also, Sherry, November 1 to 3, we've got something special coming up right here in Orange County.
Women in the Battle.
Yeah.
In our own backyard.
Yeah.
Loving it. It's for women who are in relationships with someone they love, husband, boyfriend, son, that struggles with sexual integrity issues. Everything from porn to prostitutes to affairs. And we take the whole weekend to work on healing your heart and giving you a roadmap for recovery.
I'm sorry, guys. Where else can you hear help like this on a Christian radio show with Christian values? I mean, I'm listening to this and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, if I was a struggling wife like that, and I'm thinking, Christians can talk about a husband on porn and prostitutes? Send some money to New Life.
Thank you.
I mean,
John.
This is the only venue in the world I know of on the radio saying this stuff.
It's absolutely
living
true.
In grace, living in truth. Send your money. Keep this thing going.
It'll be church.
Sorry to be ranting here.
No.
When she said that, I went triggered something.
Thanks for listening to New Life. We'll see you tomorrow. Keep listening in. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. We hope this program has helped you by getting you insights for handling the challenges you face in your life. We want you to know that we're here for you. But you also need to know that New Life Live is a listener-supported ministry. To make your donation or to get any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE or write to us at New Life Ministries, P.O. Box 1018, Laguna Beach, California, 92652. Please join us again tomorrow for New Life Live.
Today's podcast can be downloaded through iTunes or streamed through your mobile device using Stitcher, the smart radio app. Visit newlife.com/Stitcher to download the app today.